Welcome to Real Vision. It's Monday, November 2nd, 2020, just after market close in New York. This is the Real Vision Daily Briefing. I'm Ash Bennington, joined shortly by Hedge Fund Telemetry's Tom Thornton. But first, with the day's stories, Jack Farley.
Thanks, Ash. In Europe, lockdowns have officially begun. Germany and France led the way last week. In Belgium now, all non-essential stores are now closed. Spain has closed many of its borders. The UK will start its four-week partial lockdown on November 5th. Meanwhile, the ECB is slowing down its bond purchases under PEP, the Pandemic Emergency Purchase Program. Last week, we saw the smallest amount of purchases since March, only 11 billion euros. Now, this spells trouble for retail stores. One investment bank noted that about 80% of the profits of retail stores come in the months of November and December. So a double-dip recession in Europe is somewhat of a fait accompli. While the deterioration of the European economy is almost certain, the political future of the United States remains very much in the balance. Political site 538.com ran over 40,000 simulations and has Vice President Biden winning in 89% of them. But you go on a betting site like Predictit, and Biden's lead looks much more marginal. Who's right, the analysts or the punters? I'm sorry, I don't know if I can call them investors. We'll see tomorrow. The outcome of this election affects society, obviously, but markets as well. Not just indirectly, but in very tangible ways. Ways that we might be able to see on our screens tomorrow. For example, the blue wave thesis has dominated the zeitgeist for the past month. And with it has gone the curve steepener trade. The idea being that Democrats would pass an ample fiscal stimulus package that requires the Treasury to issue lots of new long bonds on the long end of the curve to finance the budget deficit. This is why yields on long bonds, such as the 30-year Treasury, have increased over the past month, and why speculators are the most short long bonds they've ever been, as Rao pointed out in his expert view today, the winter of discontent. But a Trump victory would throw a wrench in this curve steepener trade. Actually, the ultimate fly in the ointment would be a Biden victory coinciding with the Republicans holding onto the Senate. Whatever the future holds, we've been in a holding pattern. Despite the violent sell-off in equities last week, the credit markets have so far held firm. While equities posted a loss of 2.6% for October, even triple C bonds reported a small gain. And that happened during another month of record issuance for junk bonds. Today, by the way, the Dow and the S&P posted healthy gains, while the tech-dominated NASDAQ continued to droop. Now, I'm not jealous of the people who have to count the votes, but you know who I am jealous of? The Real Vision subscribers who haven't seen all this great content that we have just today. We've got Rao's expert view. We've got Jason Buck doing a Real Vision Live with two volatility traders. We've got Mike Green and Dan McMurtry talking about passive flows in the market. We've got a crypto interview with Robert Leshner and Sebastian, who's part of our crypto editor, part of Ash's team. And then we have three new reports, one from John Floyd, from Warren Pies, and from Paul Hodges as well. And that's not even including the Real Vision Daily Briefing. With that, let's go to Ash and Tommy Thornton.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Welcome back, Tom.
Ash, great to be here again. Big day.
Great to have you. Big day. Here we are, the Monday before Election Day 2020. Where do you begin in this context?
Well, I think the market is trying to price in a Biden win. I think that's kind of what people are expecting. You got to always be thinking what could go wrong. And I think the big risk would be a contested election. And with the polls tightening a little bit, I think there's that possibility.
Yeah. What does that mean in terms of your interpretation of what markets are going to do going forward? How do you think about the risk of a potentially contested election? And what's the potential impact on markets?
We had a contested election in 2000, as you remember, between Bush and Gore. The markets had already been selling off with a pretty rough earnings quarter previous to the election, and the markets didn't like it. And I think they dropped around 7% right after that. So I think there's uncertainty with a contested election, obviously, and the market hates one thing, and that's uncertainty. So we just have to see what happens. I mean, maybe there's a little bit of anticipation that there's going to be this contested election and the markets won't care. But I think it's a precarious time. I hope that cooler heads prevail. 50% of the country is not going to be happy with the outcome. And I think that my hope is that whoever wins will do their best to unify the country and put some things at ease as tensions out there in the world.
Yeah, I never thought I'd say this, but 2000 seems like a gentler time by comparison to where we are today. You know, if there is some risk of a contested election priced in, maybe that could become a tailwind if we get a definitive result, which we all hope for tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think that there's the possibility of having a couple different swings up or down like we had in 2016. You know, in 2016, we came into the election, the market was more oversold, and the positioning was different as compared to now. I used the MARC indicators, and the Dow on, I think it was November 4th, had a downside DeMarc sequential buy countdown signal. And the market sentiment using the daily sentiment index, I think, was at 10%. And yesterday's reading, last Friday's reading for the daily sentiment index was 23. So we still have some downside risk with market sentiment getting fully oversold. There's also the setup is different also because several weeks ago we had a sell countdown on the DeMarc indicators, and the DeMarc indicators track exhaustion signals from a trend ending or trend ending on the upside or the downside. So I think we're right at a place where for everybody, they just need to watch where the September lows are. And if we break the September lows and we're somewhat a little oversold, I think there's risk of a much deeper decline. And I'm thinking it could be 8 to 10% from these levels here. And you've lost some leadership with some of the big cap, mega cap names. Amazon really has broken down. I think you've seen, Facebook, Apple, and Google, they had good numbers. Apple and Facebook didn't do so well. Microsoft, the same thing. And their numbers were fine. It's another thing. The market has not rewarded good earnings. And I think that 85% of all the stocks in the S&P that reported were earnings beats, EPS beats, revenue beats. There's been a lot of triple plays, as bespoke research calls it, where you get a beat on the EPS and revenues and then a raise. And even when you saw that, stocks didn't really react positively as they generally you would think they would. So I think there's a lot of overhang after this earnings report that happened. Now, remember one thing also, earnings started on October 12th with JP Morgan and the bank starting, and that was the exact high of the bounce from the September lows. We also had an upside DeMarc. That was the day we had an upside DeMarc sell countdown 13 on the S&P and a couple other indices. So my fear, and this is what I've been telling the hedge fund telemetry people, if we break the September lows, it could motivate sellers to get out. And usually sellers always sell lower. So that's the risk. If we hold these levels, we could rally, but it's going to be tough.
Yeah. What does it suggest to you about the dynamics, about the sentiment that people are not getting paid right now? They're not getting rewarded for the earnings that are coming out pretty well.
A lot of companies didn't give guidance, so the analyst had really no clue to go off of with guidance. They haven't had guidance in two quarters, so they had guidance that they came up with their models, and I think that it's also that stocks were priced in. They were priced right in. You had a great third quarter. August was a really good month up until the middle. And then, things started to get a little dicey, but still it was a good quarter. You've had a big run from the March lows. So I think that it's just things got priced in. I was on last time. I think we talked about one of the things that I was watching was the plateauing of some of the economic data. And I thought that earnings data could plateau as well. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah. But even in the absence of guidance, Tom, you can always look year over year and get a benchmark for where those earnings have come in. And yet, at the same time, we're seeing, as you said, there doesn't seem to be a reward for earnings being strong.
Yeah, that's a sign of an overbought market. And, you know, we've pulled back about 8%. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's all we're going to get. But I really think that, again, it's a broken record. We break the September lows, all bets are off. And I think that the market's going to be in a very difficult place.
Yeah. It's obviously, look, it's a challenging time right now to have this conversation here on the second. We know that there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty being priced in. We know that we could have a jump condition in several different directions, 24 hours or 36 hours from now, and we could get no news. So it's a bit of a precarious time as investors must look at their screens trying to get a sense of which direction things are going.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And, you know, let's just remember there's a backdrop of COVID cases increasing, and that's causing all sorts of uncertainty. It really hit the European markets last week. They bounced today. I think that that's sort of a dead cat bounce right now. I think that European markets are going to continue to just fade lower, especially if there's, you know, lockdowns that go further than a month.
Yeah. You know, we've been looking at those charts on this program, looking at the infection rate, looking at the mortality rate from COVID. The infection rate has risen far more steeply than the mortality rate. We may be at the beginning of that curve right now. That's, again, a sort of thing where you feel indeterminacy. You definitely see cases are rising. We haven't seen, thank God, the kind of waves of mortality that we've seen in the past two peaks, this being the third. But then again, unfortunately, mortality is a lagging indicator. So again, uncertainty knowing where we're going to be in the U.S. In the weeks and months to come.
Well, the testing is helping that keep that mortality rate low, because it's caused people to think and say, hey, okay, I was just tested positive. I'm going to self-isolate or get treatment. And I think that's a real positive. Now, there's also a potential real big positive coming in the next week or two with some of the data. Pfizer, I think, has some data that they're going to be releasing on their COVID vaccines and therapies. And I think if something positive comes from that, I think this market's going to really respond favorably. I think that the tough thing for Trump would be if he does lose and then they come out with a vaccine. And I think his Twitter will just go off the charts.
Yeah. Well, you know, thinking about some of the points that we've made here in these first few minutes, a couple of themes obviously seem to develop. It's indeterminacy, uncertainty, too soon to tell. We're going to know in a few days. We're going to know in a few weeks. We're going to know in a few months. So the question that all naturally begets, Tom, is what do investors do right now? How do you take talking heads on the screen, talking about uncertainty, indeterminacy, the fact that we're going to get answers in days, weeks, months? How do you position yourself right now? And how do you think about what you're doing in this environment?
Well, this is really actually a very good question, because it doesn't necessarily pertain to just the election, because I think it pertains to a lot of economic data that comes out or earnings data that comes out.
Yeah.
And sometimes for example, my models have many of the ETFs that we follow set up short right now, and I've got nice gains in them, which is great. I'll stay short those, and if things reverse, I can quickly turn the other direction as the models make that change. If someone is just sitting on cash, I don't think it really is a great bet to say, I'm going to put money to work in before a catalyst. And there's a hedge fund manager that I used to work with, and he would take his position off ahead of earnings results. And then once the earnings results were out and he could see with some certainty the direction, he'd be right back in it, long or short, and that would save him a lot of anxiety. And you may miss some of the upside or the downside or whichever direction you're going in the market. But I think if you look back to 2016, we had a whipsaw market that night. I mean, I everybody remembers it was down huge with news Trump was going to win. And then in the morning, the market really reversed. And I said to my subscribers, I said, okay, you may not like who was elected, but buy Goldman Sachs, and I think you're going to have a good trade from there. And it tended to work out pretty well. So let's look at it this way. If you don't know the outcome of a particular catalyst, it's okay to say, I don't know. And it's okay to sit on your hands, and it's okay to have a little extra cash ready to deploy. And there's a lot of people that will look at it and say, oh, I didn't buy the bottom. And I want to say, yeah, but you're going to buy the next 10% or 15% higher. And I think that's what I think people need to understand, that it's okay to sit on your hands, be patient, wait for your pitch. As you know, we just have to think that way. We have to not necessarily think that we're going to be right. If you're wrong, let's say you take a position today and you say, this is going to happen, and it's exactly what the market thinks is going to happen, you could still be wrong and the markets could still go down. So I'd rather watch the reaction and see how people are reacting and then move in that direction, and maybe a little slower in this day and age with such a big catalyst that what we have. It's not, you know, I can tell you that I remember times where we absolutely, as a firm, we knew exactly, we were positioned long a particular tech stock. We had a very good understanding of the trends going into it. They came out, they beat, they raised, and the stock went down. It's just the positioning was off. So we have to really understand that the positioning is set up long right now in the market. People are expecting the market to go up after this. You know, we'll see. It may not. And you have to just be cognizant of that and sit tight.
Yeah. You know, I was talking with Ral, I think it was Friday, and Ral said, sometimes nothing is the hardest thing to do.
Yeah, I watched that. That was good. I liked it live. And I'm really jealous of Raul's little underground lair in the Caymans. I mean, that's just, why aren't we invited to that bar? I mean, that's so cool.
I don't know, but I do know that apparently where he is in Little Cayman, there's no social distancing, in effect. It's a small island. The people who are on the island have all tested negative. And so you can go out to restaurants, you can hang out in bars, you can go about your life.
Yeah, that's not what it's like for us here in the Northeast, and everybody's panicked and nervous. And I took my daughter, who she just got home from Dallas Friday. I took her Saturday for a test, and thankfully it came back negative. But it took about 5 hours for her to sit there and wait in the car, socially distanced, to go in to the exact time. And but we're all getting tested. We're all getting tested. And I think the more we test, the better we're going to be fighting this terrible pandemic.
Yeah. You made an interesting point about testing earlier. You know, implicit in that was that the fact that the number of case count is going to rise because testing is happening more aggressively, but also hopefully that it's going to drive down the mortality rates because we're going to know who has the virus. We're going to get a better handle on it and hopefully get people treated earlier.
Yeah, it's obvious that works. And I'm looking at the data in Europe, and the testing has caused the spike in positive tests to go crazy, but the mortality rate is so much lower. And so I'm hopeful that, okay, if we can do this and just bridge this to when we have a vaccine or therapies. And, you know, remember, the vaccine may not work as effectively on everybody, and it could cause some side effects as well. And I was talking to a doctor, and he said, you know, this could be like a vaccine that you got to get every 6 months or every year, like you do for a normal flu shot. And it's flu season starting as well. So that reminds me, I have to get a flu shot.
So how do you think about all of that with regard to the dynamics of marketing, of the market right now? You talked about positioning earlier, saying that we are overall positioned long. How do you gauge that? How do you think about that? And how do those factors that you just mentioned play into your view?
Well, I look at market sentiment and positioning a lot. And again, the market actually saw the S&P positioning for large speculators and the COT data go up last week. That is calculated on a Tuesday, and they didn't have the rest of the week, which was a disaster, as you know. But you also have a lot of shorting in the volatility indices. And that, to me, is maybe more concerning, because we've seen it oftentimes where, I mean, we have very high elevated volatility right now, which is really unprecedented going into an election with the markets not so far off the highs. I think it's, you just have so much risk with the election, COVID, it's going to stay high, but people are betting on it. We could see some rather wild swings. And if that short position starts to unwind, which I thought it looked like it was going to Friday, this market could really get hit hard. I mean, you want VIX positioning the other side for fuel for on the upside.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Tom, for people who are not familiar with the Commitment of Traders report and the data that comes out of CFTC, what is it and how do you use it?
Well, to keep it very simple, these are large speculators versus dealers. You look for large speculators, which are basically hedge funds, CTAs, and how they're positioned. They have to report their positioning on the futures exchange every Tuesday. So it's calculated, comes out on Friday. When you see the dealers set up, let's say, very long, speculators are on the other end. Generally, they're very short. That could cause a short squeeze because dealers tend to be the smart money and the speculators tend to be the fast money that will move in and out. So, I remember having a conversation with Paul Tudor Jones several years back where he said, you know, positioning is everything for me. So I look at this rather closely. It moves a little slower at times because it takes a lot to move something from a positive to a negative. They don't necessarily swing like market sentiment does. But I think right now, like again, in 2016, the market was set up short. So there was a lot of fuel for a short squeeze, which we got. Now it's set up long, and that could be a limiting factor for the market to have fuel on a short squeeze. And the other data that I look at with short interest, it's relatively low. So you don't have the risk of stocks getting squeezed higher. For example, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, some of these big ones that reported, there was short interest on like a half day to cover. And that is just an absolute bare bottom of how a stock is positioned. So if there's nobody there to cover, you could have a much deeper pullback if something goes wrong. And I don't know what could go wrong. You know, we just have an election with the most polarized electorate ever. You've got a lot of tensions, social tensions, race tensions. I'm certainly hopeful that cooler heads prevail.
Yeah, absolutely. On a slightly less divisive note, One story that I've noticed getting reported over the last week to 10 days is the shift that's happening with regard to the view that people hold toward cannabis. It seems there have been a spate of articles that I've read in the last week or so talking about how there really isn't a lot of conservative opposition to cannabis any longer. I remember reading polling data a while back saying that the distinction between people who self-identify as conservative versus progressive, as you look to younger generations, young conservatives just don't care about cannabis any longer. They have no opposition to it whatsoever. What does that potentially portend as we look forward? And how does the election play into that?
I think cannabis stocks have the opportunity to rally. And it's kind of obvious because the Biden-Harris campaign stance is that they will legalize cannabis. And I think that's a positive. I think they're also going to decriminalize cannabis. So I think that's a real big positive. And I think socially, you have a lot of people that, okay, let's, you know, have a good time and edibles and, you know, all sorts of vape pipes and all sorts of stuff it's sort of more common. So I think there's a upside there, and the businesses are actually doing well. There was a bubble, it burst, and now you're starting to see those stocks bottom out and recover. And I think that this is a market that likes these animal spirit type plays, Bitcoin, the tech stocks, Tesla, and if the cannabis stocks get moving, I think there's going to be a big move there. So the ones I talked with Todd Harrison, who I know you know very well, and the one ETF he really likes is MSOS, and that's a cannabis ETF. It's a newer one, Advisor Shares. It's more of a U.S. based cannabis play versus the MJ, which I also think has a lot of upside as well. That has a lot of Canada exposure in there as well. So I'm not an expert in there, but I will say that this is a sector that I think could really take off. I also have another one that I just was working on, and I don't know why, but I played the coffee market about five times in a row over the last several years. We have downside DeMarc exhaustion signals, and it's beat down really hard every time I've had those. And this will probably be the last time. It probably won't work now, but it really, we've seen 20% gains in coffee. And so you could do an ETF, coffee futures, which are a little tricky to trade, or you can buy the ETF JO. Joe. So those are some areas I like on the long side.
Yeah. Cannabis, definitely an interesting one to watch. Hadn't heard about the coffee trade.
You watch. It's everybody's going to love coffee. I think this is going to be a good trade.
Interesting. Tommy, final thoughts as we head into this election tomorrow?
Well, look, we have a big, big catalyst happening in the next couple of days, and I'm not sure if we're going to even have an outcome. I think that right now it's very dangerous when people have very strong convictions of what they think is going to happen. So as I've said, I'm waiting for the catalyst to pass to see the reaction, assess the situation, put some money to work. I think that people will make money in the fourth quarter. The seasonality tends to be good in the fourth quarter. You're going to have a stimulus package one way or another that the market will start to price in. So I think right now it's just stay in the next few days with dry powder, have some cash ready to go. And again, if something goes wrong, be careful because something could slip below that September level. So right now, I'm very cautious on both sides and just think that one should just keep an eye out for opportunities and be patient.
So be afraid of people who have very high convictions during times of great uncertainty.
I think so. I think we've seen a lot of people with real strong convictions find out that their candidate didn't win, the polls were wrong, the markets went the wrong direction, even though something happened that they thought would happen. So I think there's a lot of variables there that we just have to be aware of and be patient, be smart. Don't be, you know, you don't have to hit a home run here ahead of the election.
Yeah, very wisely said. And try not to argue with friends and family on Facebook. It doesn't change anything.
I have a no politics rule in our house right now. We're going to watch Netflix probably tomorrow night, not CNN or Fox or any of that. I don't have any interest.
Good luck with the next 48 hours.
All right.
Tom Thornton from The Bubble, thanks for joining us.
All right. Take care, Ash.